Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here today with Michael Whitaker. Michael was Common Good's first official hire back in 2017. Prior to Common Good, we worked together at a leading alternative investment company. So Michael has been instrumental in all aspects of our endeavor to bring impact investing to RIAs, multifamily offices, and family offices. We have seen him lose 75 pounds, buy a house, have two kids with his wife, Christy, over the last several years. So we've been there in the trenches together. Michael is a feeler and can be very vulnerable. So I'm totally interested to see where this goes today. No pressure. It doesn't have to go touchy-feely, but if it does, that's okay too.
I brought my Kleenex.
Well, I figured you did. So Michael, at some point, I'm going to interject a story. We're going to figure out where it flows to give you an idea of who Michael is. But the one little snapshot was, as I got to see Michael, I don't know, maybe you're 300 feet away. I'm in a skybox and he's down on the Orlando Magic court. And we'll touch on that later, maybe if it comes up. So Michael, give us a little background on where'd you grow up, where you went to school, a little bit about your career. Let's get to know you a little bit.
I grew up here in Orlando, Florida. I am the son of two parents. I have two loving parents. Grew up here in Orlando. I had two sisters who were much older than me, 6, 7 years older than me. And so around, you know, my more formative years, middle school, high school, in a lot of ways, I was an only child and just had really disparate interests. I was an athlete, played baseball and football. But in freshman year, you know, I was leaving freshman football practice to go be a part of the school play. So interested in the arts, all kinds of different things that I was interested in and working through. So yeah, I grew up here in Orlando. My first year of college, I went to Gardner Webb, which is a small school in North Carolina, small Christian school, and had no clue what I wanted to do. But I knew that it was a private school and I was paying a lot more than I could here at UCF. So I moved back, rented an apartment with my best friend and came back to UCF where I studied English and basically worked full-time leasing apartments during that period. So yeah, graduated from UCF, English major, read a lot of books, wrote a lot of essays, had no intention of being a teacher or using that English degree. Graduated in 2009 in a tough job market and really set about trying to figure out what I wanted to do, which started with managing a car wash. That was my first real job out of college. Believe it or not, I had no experience in the car wash industry up to that point.
But hadn't you washed your own car and your parents' cars up to that point?
Never seen a clean car in my life.
Okay. All right. Good.
Inside or out, always dirty. So yeah, I had no idea what I was doing. And it was really formative for two main reasons. One, up until that point, by applying myself, I could always get a B+. I could always get an A. And that was not the case in a car wash. I learned that I was limited and there were things that I was not good at. For instance, my wife brought the toolbox into our family. And so a big part of my job was keeping that car wash running and I was awful at it.
That is a problem.
Yeah.
Because when you're saying you can't just work harder, I'm thinking, can't you just scrub a little bit harder on the car? And
well, this was a drive-through car wash. And so it was really, you know, a big part of my job was keeping that machinery going. You know, I'd be interested to talk to the owner of the car wash at this point, but I was growing sales, but not quite as much as I was growing how much we were spending on needing to hire people to come fix this car wash. So I learned two things. One, I needed to find something that was in my strengths. I also learned, though, how important it was to work for good people and a good company. The owner of that car wash was really instrumental in my life, really took an interest in me personally and professionally. And also, you know, he ended up selling that car wash probably 6 months after I decided.
Well, it's because it didn't work anymore. Yeah. He had to sell it.
He sold it for parts. It was scrap metal. But he ended up selling it after I decided that I was going to go find something else to do. And really the key takeaway from my time there was I wanted to work for a good company. And so I went on a long, speaking of disparate interests, I tried a lot of different things, worked for a few different good organizations, ended up going to the shop we were at previously, where some of the highest character friends in my life, they all worked there. And so that's how I got involved in financial services and the industry. But it was really more of a way to work in a good company and with good people at that point than it was to be involved with financial services.
Do you want to talk at all about your phone experience?
Oof.
You don't have to. Is there any, does that apply at all to any of what we're talking about?
It does apply. I am just being honest now. I don't know. During that search, I did work for a company that showed me all the reasons integrity and character is important in the workplace by showing me the opposite. So yes, I've made stops along the way that pointed out a lot of the things I don't want to do in a career.
I remember when you and I met, that was Einstein's Bagel.
Yeah.
Right on the corner there of Orange and 1792.
Yep.
I had obviously known you from CNL, which is making me think maybe I should tell that story. But one of the things that you are very well known for is you have a great sense of humor. We're at this other company. We were having a sales meeting, and at least this is my remembering. This is how I remember it. So you may have to chime in. And so we have a sales meeting. We're in the, whatever, the skybox having a catered hot dogs or whatever you have in the middle of an Orlando Magic game. And lo and behold, you and another guy at CNL who you're good friends with ended up playing Simon Says. How did you guys get on the floor?
I don't remember exactly how it happened. I think someone else at CNL or someone else at our previous firm had friends that were somehow involved with game day operations. I really don't know what it was, but we ended up going down to the floor just to watch, you know, I think it was warmups or something. And then we found someone else and we said, hey, whatever this halftime thing you guys have doing, we want to be a part of it. And so they figured out a way to get us on the floor.
And so it came down to Michael and this friend.
Well, first we were playing kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You see, I don't even remember that. But now that you say it, I do remember that. And Michael, you're what, 6'3"?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're a big guy. And your friend, he's six, not small. But
yeah, he's probably 6 foot.
Yeah, so you have, that's right. I had totally forgotten that. So you have basically you weren't dads, but I'm going to call you dads, but down there beating up on the little kids.
Two grown men taking on a band of children in Simon Says.
Yes. And it came down to the two of you. But I will tell you this. And by the way, so we're all watching and you guys are hilarious and funny. But I'm going to tell you, your buddy actually should have been thrown out because he balked a little bit. Did you know that?
You know, I've seen the replay and yeah, I absolutely should have been the winner. I was the winner.
You were the winner, but he shouldn't have even been there. So obviously you win this thing, but here's what's so funny to me. As you guys get to know Michael here, maybe he'll come through or not. Michael is funny and can make anybody laugh. Underneath that though, is as we all do, there's an insecurity that I would not guess that you would end up on the floor of an Orlando Magic game doing Simon Says, but yet you did and you're awesome. And that's kind of the dichotomy about you a little bit.
I definitely have this reputation of being carefree, fun, energetic that doesn't match with how I see myself or feel myself through the day. I would describe myself as one of the most tightly wound people that I know, but I can have a good time every once in a while.
The lots happened in the last 3+ years, not only here at Common Good, but personally, as I just mentioned, again, I can remember all of those moments from, I don't want to spin. I hate spinning and I guarantee you, I won't like it, to boom, you start liking it and end up being asked, or you were a star of the month or whatever it was. And then to buying your first home, which, you know, it's a big ordeal and you've done it. And then now you have two kids. How would you describe who Michael is today in the context of this greater journey that you're on?
It's so funny to be having you ask me that question for public consumption when Jeff has seen me cry in the office multiple times going through a little bit of a identity crisis. Well, you mentioned spinning. So when I first started at Common Good, Jeff and Jonathan would, they would spend an inordinate amount of time talking about their cycle stats from their spinning.
But they were worthy to speak about.
Oh, I will say,
okay,
you're incredible on the bike.
I used to be. I don't know about now.
Yeah. So you and Jonathan would talk a lot about your performance in this spinning class that you guys would do, and I thought it was I thought it was so funny to be making fun of you guys for doing that, and then you basically made me go.
We did. Because we loved you though,
and I absolutely thought I would hate it. The lights, the cheering, you know, there was nothing. Well, the fact that I was terribly out of shape, there was nothing about it that I thought would be up my alley. And you're right. I went and ended up loving it. I was obsessed. And that really, so around that time, Christy was pregnant with our first, and doing those classes and, you know, starting to get my nutrition and diet together. Just a little background. I graduated from high school. I was 300 pounds. And when you would have known me at our previous firm, I probably was 330 around there. So I'd always been a bigger guy, but I got a little momentum from this cycling endeavor that I was on, started losing weight. And it was actually, I got my appendix taken out on Thanksgiving that year.
I remember that.
And there were these, you know, afterwards in the discharge papers or whatever, they said, you know, if you start to gain weight, then you need to come back because something could be wrong. And I started to gain weight, not from anything being wrong, but I just went back to eating unhealthily. And it just, Christy was pregnant and it really just set me on this, you know, kind of, I just was confronted with the fact that I needed to figure out how to take care of myself better. I like to think that I was someone who carried 300 pounds well, but I definitely wasn't healthy. And I thought it had to be that way. I thought I was, you know, I was just made a bigger guy and I would always be a bigger guy. But the fact that we were going to be having our first child, I knew I needed to take care of myself so that my son wouldn't have to feel the way that I felt, where he was just destined to be a big guy and didn't have agency over his body and even his heart and mind and that. So yeah, so it started down this journey of, when you ask who I am, I lost 75 pounds probably in 4 months.
Yeah, it was spectacular.
It was wild. And it was, you know, I felt the best I had ever felt. And on the other hand of that, though, in a sense, the space that my body occupied changed. The world saw me differently, and I saw myself differently as well. Not necessarily better, but just my experience of who I was, the questions of who I was, really came uncovered there. And so today, you know, a few years removed from that, I've been on this journey of trying to better understand who I am. You know, I would say, who I am today is someone who absolutely believes that character and the contents of our character and integrity matters. Whereas I might not have thought that, you know, I've always thought it mattered, but it was never a driving part of who I am. And a lot of that comes from being a dad now. But really it's, I want to be in a place where I can live authentically as who I am and be a blessing to others and make the path, you know, clearer for my kids to be able to do the same. I think that's where I'm at.
That's a pretty significant change over the last 3 years or 4 years or whatever it is.
Well, it's frustrating because as I'm having these thoughts, when you start to write down in your journal how important character is and you're thinking about these things all the time, it's much clearer all the ways that you fail that. Yeah, it's a lot of change, and I wouldn't say that it's all been graceful, but yeah, that's the main drive of my life, I feel like, right now.
So you just mentioned the word change. So I'm going to give you a very small question to answer, and that would be, how are you trying to change the world?
That's such an interesting question. I feel like the inclination in this type of interview would be to talk about my career and all the things that I do professionally in order, you know, in impact investing, there are a lot of things we do that are clearly trying to benefit others as well as ourselves. But I think the way that I really see myself being able to make the biggest impact is by fully living out of who I am and who I'm called to be. You know, I really want a thought that comes to mind is recently I've been thinking about wholeness rather than happiness. Like happiness, obviously super important. One of the, you know, top 10 things I'd like to feel. but it's not everything. I think living out of a place of wholeness and bringing wholeness to others, that's the change that I want to see. I want to be a blessing to the people around me, to Christy and to my sons and to you guys in the workplace and, you know, what we're doing, talking with financial advisors. Would really love for what I do to bless their day. They get a ton of calls and a lot of people want things from them. If I could not be a drain, but actually be a you know, bring them energy, that would be, that's how I can see myself being able to change the world. And not just myself, but I think the more each of us can live out of who we are meant to be, the more likely we are to change all of our little corners of the universe.
That was really good, Michael.
That's from a poem.
Man, I'm impressed. We're going to get probably a little more into impact investing, or at least that theme. When did you realize the power of capital, or what does the power of capital mean to you?
I think there's so many ways that you can answer that question. I think, you know, I grew up in a Christian household where there's a lot of talk about money in the Bible. There are a lot of warnings about money in the Bible. And I also was graduating from college in the financial recession. And so I think I've always had a appreciation for the power of capital in a negative sense. The ways that capital can be dangerous, you know, I've always had a sense of that. I think the power of capital for a positive, in one sense, times when my family growing up had more money versus when they did not, you know, the way that we were able to live in times of, you know, more prosperity versus the others, you know, there's that sense. And another, in my first role in financial services, part of my job was to raise capital. And I could see the way that my ability or inability to raise capital could affect the ability of a company to fulfill its mission. You know, that was eye-opening for me. And I think expanding that into where we are now, where not only are the companies that we're working with trying to make money, but they're also, they have missions outside of just making a profit that need to execute in order to see things through. You know, that's something that weighs on me that I think about. I also think probably the biggest way that I've seen the power of capital is when we were in the interview process of me coming potentially to Common Good. And you sent me impact reports on a couple of the things that you had worked with in the past, or, you know, some materials that you had seen, and seeing some of the impacts of those specific real life examples of investments that you had made or been involved with early in the process. I didn't know anything about impact. And so it was interesting, but it didn't feel personal until I saw those impact reports and saw that not only capital, but capitalism can be put to use in a way that is about more than just making a profit.
What does stewardship mean to you?
Stewardship to me is realizing that all of life is a gift and making the absolute most of that gift that you can. Over the past several years, both personally and professionally, there have been major ups and major downs. And I got very tired of being tossed about on those waves of highs and lows. And I think during that, I realized that even hard times, what's the phrase? A good crisis should never be wasted. Even those tough times are a gift. I can't look at a good life and call it a good life if only positive circumstances are required. And so for me, stewardship is taking into account just the givenness, the gift of life, and making the most of it. And not only to build up yourself or your self-worth or your material worth, but to build up others as well.
Do you have any sense of an individual situations that have been pivotal to you answering that question the way you just did?
What do you mean? Like, is there a person's story or?
Yeah, just so when we talk about stewardship and the way that you articulated your answer, what are the influences that, or influences, whether it's people or circumstances, that allow you to say, let's view life as a gift? You got to have hardship in a life for there to be real rich meaning. I'm just curious how you got to that point.
You know, sometimes you feel like you uncover a truth and then it's everywhere. There's a book I was reading that just mentioned a poem by Wendell Berry. And it said that one of the lines in the poem is, "We live the given life and not the planned." And that just really struck me because at the time I would have given anything to just do my life according to the plan that I had for it. But there were all manner of circumstances that I couldn't change. The phrase "a given life" is really what opened it up to me. This idea of it being a gift, you know, my dad, longtime Floridian, Southern guy, and he would always say, "You don't look a gift horse in the mouth." And I think looking in the Bible, there's, you know, Jesus, one thing that he never had patience for was grumbling, complaining about gifts. It's entirely inappropriate. And my dad would say that in the past. And I think in my own beliefs, you know, I believe God created me. I believe that God has the best intentions for me. And if I look through that frame of thought, it's hard not to see anything but blessings, even through hardships. And so to look at all that's been given to me, you know, my wife, my family, this job, the relationships, but even the trials, to look at it and complain, feels silly. And that's not to say there aren't real problems in the world. And there's no doubt that I'd like for some things to be easier, but I know that I'm better for every trial that I've been through. So stewardship to me in that sense is accounting for the giftedness of life, how it's a gift, and making the most of it. And I feel like, I mean, even today I read a Faulkner quote where it says, it's hard to believe. I mean, I'm totally botching this. I read it today. Hard to believe. It's hard to believe, but I can't, I'll find it. but the quote's basically that it's hard to believe, but the best thing for us is destruction or something along those lines. Where does that actually, that's what it is. It's hard to believe, but disaster is the best thing for people. And so I've just seen time and time again that it is only making it through hard times that you develop character. And I think character, it has to come through that. It's the only way that character sticks around in the good times is by having hard times.
Did you know we were going to get into this deep on this?
I feel like this is what my mind is all the time. I'm always puzzling through this stuff.
Yeah. Well, Michael, that's why we love you. You do feel and you do think deeply about these things. So I'm going to give you one that should be nothing but fun. And that would be, if you could make a dream come true for your life, what would that be?
This feels feels a little corny, but if I could be a good wife and dad, good wife. Oh my gosh. If I could be a good wife, Jeff, I would do anything to be a good wife. If I could be a good husband to my wife and a good dad, that's what I want to do. I feel like since getting married, that was the frame through which I realized how important it is to be a good person. And then having kids, I realized, man, it's really hard to be a good dad without being a good person first. I feel like that's just the frame through how I see things. And so more than anything, I want to be a good, I almost said good wife again. More than anything, I want to be a good husband and good dad.
Do you think, is that a gift for them or is that a gift for you?
That's a good question. I think it's equal parts. If I only want to bless my kids so that I'm blessed, that doesn't even sound right saying it, but I can't imagine anything blessing me more than being a blessing to my wife and kids. There are a lot of things that I try to do for fulfillment that don't work out. But I always feel unfulfilled when I could do better in relationship. My wife and kids, but even here, I feel unfulfilled when better is needed from me and I fall short. When someone needs to pick me up and I'm not there for them. When we could use a positive outlook and I'm there to be a cynic. Those things take less energy in the short term, but in the long term, I think there's a lot more fulfillment in blessing others. There's more blessing. I think it's both.
I was going to ask you a question of, okay, so that's for your wife and your kids. What's a dream, you know, your own kind of dream? And I'm not going to ask that question because I do think what you just said, I think you being a wonderful husband and a wonderful dad is equally a blessing to them and equally a blessing to you. And it's so I'm not going to ask any more questions.
Well, I'll give you a more, I feel like a less, philosophical one. One thing I've always loved doing is writing, written short stories. And I wrote a novel once that I never tried to get published or anything. Cause it's not good enough. But one thing I would love to do is write more. One thing I'd love to do is write a novel. I have a lot of stories always going around in my head and I'm always jotting down thoughts and, you know, note cards with little ideas. Love to put more time towards that and so, write a novel one day.
So what are you waiting for?
Ran out of paper.
Well, that's sweet. I can get you some paper.
You know, nothing. I mean, it's one of those things I've started on. I'll spend hours, you know, hours and hours a week on it. And then it gets difficult and I back out. I will be honest. I haven't started trying to write now that we have a newborn, but There's a little less time for that right now, but I can find 10 minutes here and there.
Well, I will just encourage you, very much like my wife, because Shelly loves writing as well. And, she has been executing on that and doing it. So I would just encourage you, you have a gift. I've seen your writing. It empowers you. And I would let those of us who see your manuscript be the judge whether it's good enough or not. But I'd encourage it for what it's worth. Start writing. We'd love to hear what you have to say. And I very much appreciate you sharing with us today. Yes, you got vulnerable, which is exactly what I thought you would do. And I appreciate that. I know people value authenticity. And so you model that, and I am grateful for that. So thanks for joining us. And maybe someday we'll get to release even just a short story maybe on the podcast to people. That would be fine too.
That's an idea.
That would be fun. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.